Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Ajnana Chimirandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila Prabhupada. Okay, so I have four verses. So I thought the first three will do just the English, and then the fourth one will do the Sanskrit English. Okay, we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 84, The Sage's Teachings at Kurukshetra, Text 10. How is it that people who are not very austere and who recognize God only... Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh well. Exactly. Oh boy. Well, this should be interesting. Okay. So chapter 85, Lord Krishna instructs Vasudeva. All right. You are the power, this is text 10. You are the power of the senses to reveal their objects. The senses, presiding demigods, and the sanction these demigods give for sensory activity. You are the capacity of the intelligence for decision making, and the living being's ability to remember things accurately. Not me. Oh my gosh. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that whenever one of the material senses is involved with its object, the presiding demigod of that particular sense organ must give his sanction. Acharya Vishwanath Chakravarti explains the word anusmriti in this verse in its higher sense as one's recognition of himself as an eternal spirit soul. Text 11. You are the false ego in the mode of ignorance, which is the source of the physical elements, false ego in the mode of passion, which is the source of the bodily sense, false ego in the mode of goodness, which is the source of the demigods, and the unmanifest total material energy, which underlines everything. Text 12. You are the one indestructible entity amongst all the destructible things of this world, like the underlying substance that is seen to remain unchanged while the things made from it undergo transformation. Okay, and text 13. Sattvam rajas tamah iti gunas tad vrittayas chaya Vayada Brahmani Pare Kalpita Yoga Mayaya Satvam Rajasama Iti Gunasad Vrittayas Chaya Vayada Brahmani Pare Kalpita Yoga Mayaya Satvam Rajasama Iti Gunastad Vrittayas Chaya Vayada Brahmani Pare Kalpita Yoga Mayaya Satvam Raja Tama Iti, known as goodness, passion, and ignorance. Guna, the modes of material nature. Tat, there. Vritaya, functions. Cha, and. Ya, which. Fai, within you. Adha, manifestly. Brahmani, within the absolute truth. Pare, supreme. Kalpita, arranged. Yogamaya, by Yogamaya. The internal potency of the Supreme Lord that facilitates his pastimes. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, together with all their functions, become directly manifest within you, the Supreme Absolute Truth, by the arrangement of your yoga maya. Purport. Vasudeva's description of how the Supreme Lord expands himself into the products of the three material modes may possibly be misunderstood to imply that he is touched by the modes, or even that he is subject to the destruction. To negate these misunderstandings, Vasudeva states here that the three modes and their products function by the arrangement of the Lord's creative energy, Yogamaya, who is always completely under his control. Thus, the Lord is never tainted in the least by any material contact. Okay, any questions? Sorry. This is so different from the one that I planned for. But it's in glorification of the Supreme Lord. And we see that it's true, the pastimes of the Lord are often misunderstood by mundane persons because they appear to be exactly like an ordinary person. You know, Krishna eats, he plays with his friends, he shares his prasad with his friends, he herds the cows. So many things are exactly the same as an ordinary person. But here it's explaining how Yogamaya, she is the one who takes care of planning all of Krishna's pastimes. Any meetings between the cowherd girls and Krishna are all arranged by Yogamaya. Any playfulness that the cowherd boys get up to in the forest, that's arranged by Yogamaya. All of his pastimes. So even though it appears that maybe Krishna is under the mode of ignorance, you know, when he falls asleep. Or maybe it appears that, you know, he's in the mode of passion when he's killing these demons and fighting with the cowherd boys. But it isn't the same as our material modes. And here's it's explaining, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that someone might get the wrong impression. So here he's explaining that, no, this is all due to the yoga maya. And she is controlled by the Lord. We remember when Krishna was first born, yoga maya took the place of Krishna in the cell. And when Kamsa tried to kill her, immediately she flew up into the air and explained to him, "You're such a fool, Kamsa. You're thinking that you're going to kill me and kill Krishna, but he is somewhere else." Now, so she took care of that, of the exchange. She took care of making sure all of the guards fell asleep, you know, when it was time to leave the prison. So she makes all the arrangements. So it is not like this material world that is controlled by the three modes of material nature. It is controlled by yoga maya. Also here, Vasudeva is explaining how this spiritual world is so different from this material world. And how the demigods, they control everything here. But in the spiritual world, they have no control there. We see in the pastime of Lord Brahma, you know, he comes along and he sees this little boy eating with his left hand, you know, and just eating, sharing off each other's plates. And he goes, "This is God? Are you joking? This couldn't be God." So he decides to try to trick Krishna, just to test him. So he steals all of the cows. Then he steals all the calves and then all the cowherd boys, and he puts them all away. So he goes away. He says, "This will show that he's just an ordinary boy." But what happens? Krishna expands himself into every single boy and every single calf. And he behaves in the same way as every single boy and every single calf. Now that's amazing. It's said that yogis, they can reproduce themselves four times by mystic yoga power, but they all do the same thing. The hand is raised, all the hands are raised. But Krishna, he's reciprocating with every single mother, just like their own son. But there was one specific amazing thing about this, is that they became so attracted to their sons, much more than they were ever attracted to their sons and calves before. So much so that when the calves were grazing and the cows were up with the cowherd men, as soon as they saw their calves, even though the calves, it's explained, were grown up a little bit. It's like we have cows and calves, and when the calves get older, then the mothers aren't even interested in the calves. I mean, they'll come over and they'll lick each other sometimes, but there's no interest in running after them to feed them anymore. But these cows immediately became so attached that they immediately ran down the hill to associate and let these grown calves drink their milk. So this was Krishna's special blessing upon all of these mothers of Vrindavan, that they got to have Krishna as their son there for this time. So when Lord Brahma came back, and he saw, for Lord Brahma it was just a second, he saw all of these boys and calves still there. They were still eating their food stuff. He's thinking, "Wait a minute. I know I stole these boys and calves, and I put them away. I secured them. This couldn't be. What's going on?" And then Krishna showed his forearm form, and all the cowherd boys had the same forearmed form of Vishnu. So then he realized, what a mistake I've made. What an offense I have created. Here is my Lord, and he is eating and acting like a cowherd boy, and I could not even recognize him. I am such an offender. So the demigod, Lord Brahma, who is such a high demigod, out of all the millions of demigods. Yet he was bewildered by the Lord's pastime, acting as an ordinary boy. What to speak of us, and what to speak of materialistic persons. So in this way, no one can control the spiritual world. Only Krishna is in charge. And all of his devotees are there. Yogamaya is there to serve Krishna. She's not there to control the situation. She's serving Krishna in all different ways. And all the devotees, Lord Balaram, who is Sheshanag, who is also Nityananda Prabhu, are there to serve Krishna. It says that in the Brahma Samhita that when Lord Shesha is there, he serves Krishna and Vishnu in different ways. He serves him as his seating place, as his shoes. Does anybody remember some of the other things that he serves? Umbrella, yes. So in this way, even Sheshanag is a servant to Vishnu. And he comes as Lord Balaram. And he serves Krishna as his big brother. It's interesting that it said that when Lord Balaram appeared with Ramchandra, he was the younger brother. And he could not control what was going on. The big brother was in charge. He said, "We've gotten into so many messes here. You know, we've lost Sita. We had to go and fight a war. So many things. I said to you, just don't leave. Don't leave. Just take up the position of your father. No one will complain." And yet, he left anyway. "No, I must follow." So Lakshman was feeling like, I can't control any of these situations, and so many problems have come upon Ram. So when he took the next birth with Krishna, he said, "I'm the big brother this time. I am the big brother." So then he was the protector of Krishna during his pastimes in Vrindavan. So all of these devotees are there just for the service of the Lord. And also we are here for the service of the Lord. That is the constitutional position of every living entity. We are eternally the servants of the Supreme Lord. So my class today that I was preparing for was about the devotees of the Lord and how they are so special to the Lord, and how the Lord loves his devotees so much that he himself will take an inferior position to help these devotees and to take care of the devotees. And in so many places in the scriptures, Krishna describes how great the devotees of the Lord are, how that even a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord can save one from the worst fears. It can give one liberation. It can give one love of God. So we see, sometimes I consider about myself, how I became a devotee. How could this have happened? You know, I was just a Catholic girl in Missouri, you know, just having a good time and not even thinking about God. Well, I thought about God a bit. I thought about him that, you know, he was the Supreme. I was Catholic and my aunt was a nun, you know, and we would go to church regularly, and I loved the Latin masses, and yet I was still enjoying, not really thinking that, you know, Krishna was the Supreme Person. And then as I got older, I got into a little bit more impersonalism, right, and reading, you know, Be Here Now and all these, you know, totally impersonal philosophies. But then meeting Srila Prabhupada's devotees, just meeting his devotees and seeing how they loved Srila Prabhupada so much. And even they didn't know so much philosophy, and yet just their association drew me towards the devotees. And then I got one of the blue Bhagavad Gitas and read that. And it amazed me, because I'd read one of these little Gita Press Bhagavad Gita's, and I had thought, wow, this is amazing, but I didn't understand a word of it. But then getting Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, wow, you know, I'm not this body. And funny thing is that when I was a young girl one time, my parents had chickens and all kinds of animals on them. And I was sitting on the back steps feeling a bit bored, and I was watching these chickens. You know how chickens, they don't have arms or anything, so they're just like pecking around, right? Pecking, pecking. And suddenly I felt like I was a chicken. It was really weird. I had the same sensation that I couldn't use my arms, and that I wasn't on anything. I was young. And I was thinking, wow, one time maybe I was a chicken. So it kind of jolted my consciousness that maybe at some point I had been a chicken, and a chicken, although the Catholics don't believe in another life, it's just this is it and final. But somehow this idea came into the consciousness. And so when I read the Bhagavad Gita and saw that, you know, this isn't your only life, you know, you're not this body, it really made so much sense. Immediately I could understand, yes, I had this experience before. I'm not this body. I could be any kind of body, you know, but I'm the soul within. So, you know, just that little association, and then the association of the pure devotee through reading his books had such an effect that even though I was very attached to my family members, I just left. In fact, I left the country. I went over to England, just flew away. And I was only just had turned 16. So, you know, it's an amazing thing how a little association with a devotee of the Lord or the devotees of the devotees of the devotees of the Lord can have such a strong effect on one. You know, and then I was reading a bit about aparads to devotees, because I've noticed lately that there's a bit of a controversy that's going on within our movement, and there's so many offenses being created by this one saying this and that one saying that, and putting up pictures about, you know, just blaspheming, and how bad that is. And I found a little quote from Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj. And he gave a class about Vaishnava aparad. And he was explaining how the Vaishnavas are so dear to the Lord. And for us to commit offenses to the Vaishnavas kills us. It kills our creeper. It's the mad elephant offense. And we should be thinking ourselves, we are the lowest, not the highest. We're the lowest. You know, if we really think, because we know ourselves more than any. When I see the things that pop into my mind sometimes, it's like, you know, that picture in Bhagavad Gita of the horses, yeah, and the it's like that. You're going, whoa, where is this going? You know, stop. Especially when you're trying to control it during your japa, mala. Sometimes, some days I find it's the fight of your life just to get it to settle down and be quiet. Just sit there and let me chant my japa. Let me hear the holy name. And, you know, so this mind is so crazy. So Gaura Govinda Maharaj was saying, you can't commit aparads. You have done so many austerities. You've done so much service for the Lord. And all of that is wiped out by this Vaishnava aparad. And Srila Prabhupada said, I had written this down a while back because I thought it was so amazing that some people think that if devotees commit forbidden acts, it is not offensive to criticize them, since it is simply stating the facts, right? I mean, I'm just telling the facts. This person really did this, you know, and it's so bad and blah, blah, blah. You know, since it is simply stating the facts, Srila Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, says, whether it is true or not, narrating the faults of a sadhu constitutes blasphemy, and blasphemy of a devotee will send one to hell. You know, that's potent. It's such a bad thing. You know, we're thinking that we're just dealing with ordinary persons, but not one person here is an ordinary person. You know, look at the millions of people in this material world trying to enjoy their senses. You know, and how few take up devotional service. How few even say Hare Krishna. So few. It's such a rare thing. So to blaspheme or to criticize any of the Lord's devotees is so bad. Vishnu says when the four Kumaras had come to the gates and they were offended by Jayamvijay, and he made the comment that I would lop off my arm if it was offensive to a devotee. That's how seriously he takes offenses to devotees. And yet we can rattle our tongues, rattle our keys on our keyboards, and think nothing of the blasphemy and the offenses that we're creating to other devotees. So when I heard his snippet of his lecture, I thought, yes, this is such a bad thing. That we can do so many good things and we can do so much service, and yet in a second we can wipe it all out by blaspheming devotees and being offensive and aparadas. So there's six types of aparadas to a Vaishnava, and I thought I would just read them. I'm sorry I'm going off course, but one who kills a devotee. Okay, we might think that doesn't happen. You know, that's rare. It has happened. but I was thinking with Ramanujacharya, because it's his disappearance day. Actually, he had been a disciple of an impersonalist guru. And I can't remember his name. Yeah. So he one time was explaining a verse about the lotus eyes of the Lord and how they were pinkish, reddish-hued lotus eyes. And he had said something about how it was like the posterior of a monkey, the color. And he became so stunned that his guru could say such a thing, to compare the eyes of the Lord and to translate this in such a way. So he corrected him very humbly, but he became so angry. And then he said, then you say what it meaning is, if you think I'm not right. So he explained how the Lord has beautiful lotus red eyes. And when he heard that, he was amazed that this student of his could translate this into such a beautiful thing. And he realized he's pretty powerful. And at that point, Ramanuja realized, I can't stay here any longer. He's an offender to the Lord. So he started his own school. And actually, this guru and his disciples they made a plot to kill Ramanuja. They could see that he was becoming very powerful and he was preaching personalism. So there are instances. Of course, his disciple protected him, actually. He, Koresh, his name was. And he, when the king, there was complaints to the king about Ramanuja. You know, he's becoming too powerful. So the king sent for him, and they had a plot to deal with Ramanuja. So Koresh heard of it and he begged to go in his behalf, and actually the king blinded Koresh. He took his eyes out. So it isn't that would never happen, that someone would consider to kill a Vaishnava. One who blasphemes devotees. So we talked about that. Blasphemy. Just seeing, you know, saying things about someone's mistake. You know, it's one thing to go to someone and to talk to them about their mistakes. You, my dear Prabhu, you know, this is maybe a mistake. I don't know. I would like to hear from you why, or You know, some humble, but not just blaspheming. Oh, he's such a wretch, or she's such a... Did you hear what they said? What they did? Blah, blah, blah. One who is envious of devotees. So we have to be careful not to be envious. Prabhupada gives the example of the high court judge. You know, the two friends, and the one friend says, oh, did you hear? Mr. So-and-so has become high court judge. And the other one says, oh, but he's not being paid. He's just sitting there. So that's envy. There's envy. And I know for myself, I definitely have that in my heart. And that envy, it's so awful. It's such a bad taste to feel that envy. And that has to be cut. You know, that has to be cut. The devotees are so wonderful and so rare. Four is one who fails to offer obeisances and pranams to the Vaishnavas upon seeing them. So we should immediately offer, even if we're in such a situation that it's impossible, within our hearts we should offer obeisances upon seeing the Vaishnavas. One who becomes angry with a Vaishnava. Okay, that anger is the false ego. Shh, immediately up. What? You said that. You did that. Get out of my way. You know, always there's some agitation in this material world. So that anger should never be put towards a Vaishnava. and six, one should become joyful upon seeing a Vaishnava. If they aren't joyful upon seeing a Vaishnava, that's an offense to a devotee. You know, immediately upon seeing a Vaishnava. This morning, I noticed that one of my god sisters, Samapriya, as soon as she sees a devotee, she embraces them. You know, it's such a nice thing. You know, that here's a devotee, let me embrace them, let me get their mercy. Guru Govinda Maharaj was saying in this class that the mercy of the Lord, we have to get that. And to get that, we have to get the mercy of the Vaishnava. That is how we receive that, is through the Vaishnavas. And I was thinking that this weekend is Nityananda Prabhu's appearance day, and there was a very nice quote, and I forgot to bring it, that Lord Nityananda is, like Srila Prabhupada told us, we pray to Radharani to get Krishna's service. But it said, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that Lord Nityananda and Srimati Radharani have a very special connection. That actually we cannot get Srimati Radharani's mercy without going through Nityananda Prabhu. We have to get his mercy. And to get Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, we must get the mercy of the Vaishnavas. You know, so our whole sadhana bhakti is based, the foundation is service to the Vaishnavas. It's appreciating the Vaishnavas, it's serving the Vaishnavas, and not offending them. And then we can make such rapid advancement in our Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we're doomed to this material world, life after life after life. It's such a miserable place. You know, such a miserable place. And it's not that, oh, I'm a devotee. I remember when I first joined, I thought, oh, now I'm a devotee. No bad things will happen. You know, I'm free from all. So not true. But they don't affect us in the same way. You know, the effect isn't the same. Because Krishna is so kind. He protects the devotees from all kinds of bad things. Even Haridas Thakur, you see, when he was in the marketplace being beaten, during one of the, when was it? Was that the Prakash Leela when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed the marks on his own back that he had taken the whippings of Haridas Thakur on his own back? Yeah. That. All the beatings. Yes. So how much the Lord loves his devotees. There's we can't even comprehend You know, we love our family members, we love our children, we love, you know, we have, but that is insignificant compared to how the Lord loves his devotees. So I just wanted to say that because I feel like, you know, we have to be careful, especially with this internet. It's such a dangerous tool. It can be the best tool. It can be the worst thing because it's so easy to sit behind a screen where no one is seeing you and say so many awful things. Face to face, very difficult to say awful things to someone, you know, especially if you know them. That's another thing. I've heard different stories from different devotees about how they grew up, how they joined Krishna Consciousness service that they've done for Srila Prabhupada's mission. And it makes them very dear to you. You know, because you see, wow, they've done that for Srila Prabhupada. Wow, they took that risk with their life. They gave up all that for this. They become very dear. So I think if we become more personal with devotees and actually know what they do for Prabhupada, what they do, then there's no question of blaspheming them because you see, oh, they're such great devotees. You know, I'm such a fool. And they are such great devotees. So I'll stop there. And if anyone has any more to say or about Ramanuja or Krishna or this verse that I got wrong, Prabhu.
Thank you. Nice class, Prabhu. I was just curious how you came in contact. You said you were 16 in St. Louis. Did you see Harinam party? Did somebody give you a book? What happened?
I tell you, it was amazing because I lived in this house with my parents. And this hippie couple moved next door. He'd just gotten out of the Vietnam War. And I was so attracted. I thought, whoa. You know, so I started going to their house. And I became a vegetarian then because I must have been about 14 or 15. And actually, Sundarup came there. And he became a devotee from there. And we started visiting the temple. And that's how I... And the devotees would come to my parents' house, this is amazing, and wait to get picked up. Because to make money for the temple, they were laying sod, you know, and so they were working. So the temple, the devotees would come to my parents' house and wait, and the temple would come and pick them up and take them back to the temple after work. So it was pretty amazing. I could ask questions and... My parents even were interested, like, what's she getting into here? You know, becoming a vegetarian is unheard of in Missouri in that time. No, I remember my mother reading a newspaper, and we were going shopping. I must have been about 12 or 13. You know, we're all going shopping on a Friday night. My father had been paid, and we're in the car, and she's reading the newspaper, and she goes, oh, listen to this. She's reading to my dad and saying, this man who lives just up the road, and every day he swims in his pool, even in the winter time, and he's a vegetarian. And I said, what's a vegetarian? I had no idea. I'd never even heard the term vegetarian. What's a vegetarian? And my mother said, it's someone who doesn't eat any meat. I was going, whoa. You know, and I'm thinking of the plate that's put in front of me. What's left after they would take off the meat is practically nothing, right? So when I became a vegetarian, my mother was going, you'll die! What will you eat? You know, she was just so flipped out. You know, what am I going to eat if I'm a vegetarian? You know, it's just amazing from that situation. And then I met the devotees, and then I started becoming more and more attracted. I ran away from home at one point, and I joined in Detroit, and then Bhagavan made me go back home. He made me call up my parents, and my parents said, we're coming to get you. Don't go anywhere, you know. You have to go back to school. This is illegal. And it was interesting. But actually, during that time, I got the Happening album, and I used to play it nonstop on my parents' big. And my mother learned the Maha Mantra. She would sing along, you know. It was just so amazing. So, you know, even in Missouri, you know, you can be plucked out. Yeah, 72, I went to New Vrindavan. You know, when the shooting happened there, I had told my parents I was going to visit somebody's grandparents somewhere. You know, I didn't leave any numbers. And I went with the devotees to New Vrindavan for that festival. And then the police kept nabbing me, thinking that I was the girl they were looking for. And then the uncles would come and go, no, that's not her. And I'm going, my parents are going to find out. You know, it was like so. But somehow or other, you know, I remember leaving there because I was thinking maybe I'll just stay here and not go back home, you know. And I was inquiring in the Goshala, you know, the devotee there was going, oh, yeah, it's not so bad here, you know. I was eating some of the cow's grains to keep my stomach going, you know. But now I'm pretty cool with, you know, the oatmeal, whatever they were eating. And I'm going, whoa, I don't know if I can do this, you know. And on the way home, we're in the back of this transit van, right, because the St. Louis devotees were all packed. And they had this board in the middle, so the boys and the girls would, you know. And the men had the windows open, so there was air. And the women had no air in the back, right? So we opened the back of the van and kind of just tried to keep it. And I kept thinking, maybe I should jump out because I can't become a devotee. I was, like, so disturbed, you know, that I was leaving New Vrindavan and not staying there. And because just because of my tongue or because I can't be austere, you know, it was like, oh. Anyway, somehow Krishna arranged that I went to London. And I'm so grateful for that arrangement because I got to see Srila Prabhupada. He would go through there so often. Every time he would go from America to India to Europe, he would always stop at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And so that was mercy for me. And Chaturatma also came from that group. There was about 6 or 7 devotees that came from that commune next door to my parents' house. That was quite amazing. Yeah, they're all devotees. They were hippies at the time, but they turned into happies. Yeah, that's the moment's association with the pure devotee of the Lord. You know, Prabhupada said that. We turn hippies into happies. And yeah, only the two that started the commune didn't become devotees. Yeah, and I think only because the wife was so against it and the husband got kept back because he was really interested also. But, yeah. At first they just thought it was like a cult. You know, like there was the Manson scene. All those things were happening at that time, and they thought, oh, you're going to be brainwashed and murdered or, you know. I was a pretty headstrong person, still am, but I just, after, they couldn't do anything about it. I just left. I just, you know, so then, you know, they thought, and as soon as I had children and they saw I was normal, you know, I had some kids and that to them was normal. And I came to visit them and brought the kids and they seemed normal. So then they accepted, okay, it's not so bad. But.
Hare Krishna. So what about this number 6 offense that you listed, not be happy by seeing devotees? What's the reaction for that, you think?
Well, that is Vaishnava Aparad. So that's
equal to the number 1?
Yeah. We have to be careful. We should be joyful in seeing a devotee. You know, if you look at why we wouldn't be joyful at seeing a devotee, it's usually trying to get away from something that we're seeing in that devotee that's us. You know what I mean? Like, I remember up in Kentucky, because we were, anybody who came to stay there was right with us, right? And there was this girl who came. She was a really sincere devotee, but she was driving me crazy, right? It just, her behavior, she was always finding fault with everything I did, and it was like really driving me nuts. And then one day I realized that the reason it's driving me crazy is because that's the very thing in myself that I hate to see. And I'm seeing it in her, but actually I'm seeing it in me, and that's why I'm wanting to keep that away from me. Do you know what I'm saying? So that not feeling happy to see a devotee of the Lord, you need to look at that. Why am I not happy? That is some anartha in us. It's an anartha anyway to feel like that, but there is something in there that we're seeing in them that's a bad thing in us that we need to get rid of. And that's why, I think it was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that there was one man who was always finding fault, and the devotees hated this man finding fault with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. But he saw him as his greatest friend because he's pointing out my faults. You know, if we're around people that are always praising us and a big head, you know, we just get carried away. But when we're pointed out, either by someone just pointing it out to us or by pointing it out by their behavior, they're really our friends because they're helping us to remove these anarthas, these unwanted things that are there within us that are stopping us from feeling joy at seeing a Vaishnava. You know, so those, we have to be introspective because really this life is so short and we need to remove all these obstacles and anarthas that we carry. It's like carrying a load of stones, you know, it's like, oh my. You know, if we can start unburdening ourselves by throwing them out, you know, and that comes with our japa, with our sadhana, you know, to be sincerely trying to hear the Lord's holy name and to chant and you know, to do service, to serve the Lord, to become a personalist, to see the Lord as a person, to want to do service, to serve the Vaishnavas. Those things help us get rid of those things. And Krishna's very kind. He shows us firsthand, right in your face, things that you need to remove. You know, and those come through devotees, you know, showing us. So if you don't feel joy at seeing a devotee, check in yourself. You know, have an internal check. Why? You know, and sometimes it's hard to look and it's painful to see, but you feel so uplifted once you see it and you get rid of that. Forgot me, Kipson.
You quoted, who did you quote that if even if someone did wrong, is that Prabhupada? Even if someone does wrong, to cite that is an offense. Whether they did, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of like a CPT case, a child protection team, how do you explain the validity of that and how?
But that's
how
your
to
service.
Guard, huh?
That's your service to do that. I think, you know, it's explained.
It's not
that,
my. What do you mean, my service?
No, I mean the person that's doing the pointing
managing
out.
Managing the CPT.
Yeah, that's okay. Their service. They're protecting other Vaishnavas, you know, from whatever mischief someone is. But what is it? You hate the offense and not the offender? Jesus.
You hate the sin and not the sinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that person is lost. And it's your duty to, one way or another, protect them from themselves, actually. You know, the person on the, at least that's how I see it. It's like, okay, this person might be put in prison or might, but it's something they need to cleanse themselves of this thing that they're carrying around with them.
What about, say, someone is banned from a temple or a temple property or something, and someone else doesn't know why, and it comes out, the explanation maybe, but it's the first time they ever heard that. So to even repeat that unnecessary is just a really delicate thing, hey?
It is. It's very hard.
What would you
What
would you respond to someone who would say, "Well, why are they banned? It seemed like such a nice,
nice idea."
I know this is a practical reality.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Did you want to say something about that, Pranjo Vindapur?
In the book called Upadesha, the instruction of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he says we should not focus so much of the etiquette, rules, regulation first. We should focus the purpose of the rules, regulation and etiquette. The purpose of sadhana bhakti to bring close to the devotional service to the lotus feet. So in that reference, I remember he said, pointing fault or pointing somebody's misconduct or behavior, it's not necessarily bad, but what is my intention when I'm trying to point out? If it is encouraging way to bring him closer to Krishna or service, to devotional service, and by encouraging in a way that he will be more chanting, more performing devotional service, then it should be okay, and if that is my intention. But if my intention is only just to find fault in him and he may be discouraged and go away, then it is not proper.
But her point was like, there's a child protection team, that if there's any kind of mischief that goes on, an adult perpetrating some physical thing or mental thing with a child, they might be banned from the temple, or, you know, and others ask, why is that person banned? And then they have to explain to them what goes on, and is that an offense? Would that be considered an offense? But, you know, Prabhupada explained that him talking about his god brothers, I think that would be a similar kind of thing, because he told us not to go and associate, and, you know, and someone might feel that offensive, you know, they're Vaishnavas, and but it was for protecting us, because we couldn't understand, we didn't have the intelligence to discriminate. So in a way, you explaining to that person, it's for that person's protection and for the Vaishnavas' protection, that there's this separation right now, you know. Some will agree and some won't, and what can you do? But you don't have to get into just, you know, like malicious, that person is the death, you know, because everyone is originally a servant of Krishna. So even that person who does the most awful thing in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, that that can be for someone who's on the right. So if he's on the right path, even he's done the most abominable thing, if he keeps being rightly situated, no one can stop someone from chanting the whole. That was one thing I realized when I was at home and my parents were trying to get me to stop chanting and worshiping Tulsi, is that no one can stop you from doing that. That's the one thing. They can stop you from going here and there. They can stop you from doing so many things. But no one can stop you from chanting the holy name. You know. So even someone removed from the association of devotees, they can still practice sadhana and, you know, reform themselves from whatever bad habits. Because everyone's born here with that. We come here, what do they say? We're in the prison. Our body is the prison suit. So it's obvious that we're not here because we were such pious souls, right? So, you know, all of us have done so many things, you know, but to forgive the Vaishnava and not to blaspheme them unnecessarily is important.
So maybe what I understand, maybe it is actually favor the management is doing to those devotees so that they can go within themselves and root out their,
yeah,
whatever the bad intention was in their views, and they, this way they will come to Krishna quicker.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is actually favor, it is not like bending.
That's right. They have a time of being pulled away so they can think about why they're in that situation. And I've seen that work in my associates. That, you know, they might be doing so much nonsense. And then when they get pulled away from that and separated, then they start realizing how actually my family members weren't so bad. And, you know, I've done so many bad. You know, they start reflecting on themselves. They have time for that. So that is a blessing for them, really, although it doesn't look like that.
I was reflecting on that and noticing that the matram, the malice, if you can think of the person without malice, it'll come out okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a couple of verses to put it into a philosophical orientation, like the 1:17:23 with the Maharaj Prigat and the bull, the personality of the bull, who yes, Maharaj Prigat asked him, who has done this to you?
Yeah.
And he spoke in a way that he could understand it since the personality of religion, because the identifier is equally as guilty and goes to the same destination as the person who commits the crime, which is a scary thought to think about it, that you inherit that quality that you're looking at. That's what you're seeing, that's what you get. So you get it also.
But if you think about that, the reason why we see that is because we're not seeing the Lord directly arranging this for me.
Well, that was the next place. And also in the 11th canto, 11:28:2, it says that you'll become implicated in duality. So duality brings up a whole philosophical mindset that you're not seeing the five factors of action. You're not seeing the super soul. You're not seeing the living entity, material nature, internal time and karma. You're not seeing the place, all the different philosophical training that also is another method to bring us out of this bodily conception of life.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of different ways to handle it. But ultimately, when you get to that nirmatsaranam, the tam level, the without envy, then the threefold miseries don't exist anymore. They've been uprooted by that philosophical angle.
My God, we can throw it. So I'm keeping the ring.
I just wanted to mention, you had brought up right in the beginning, mention of Yoga Maya and how she directs the pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember on Radhastami, Chaitanya Charan Prabhu was speaking about how to reconcile this question where Krishna is the supreme controller, yet he subordinates himself to Yoga Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And his explanation was that Yoga Maya is the director of the drama, and Krishna is the script writer.
Ah.
So he's still in control.
Yeah, yeah, always.
Pretty cute.
Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.